Understanding the difference between feeling blue and suffering from depression. It's not uncommon to hear someone say, "I'm depressed," when they're feeling a little blue. But there's a big difference between being sad over the loss of a loved one and feeling so low that it's difficult to perform everyday activities. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today we're going to discuss just what it means to be depressed and what treatments are available. With me in our Portland studio, Dr. Rob McCarley. He's a psychiatrist with Maine Medical Center. And Alan Bean Burpee, a therapist with Counseling Services Incorporated. Of course, we want to hear from you. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at MaineCalling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call. 1-800-399-3566. Understanding and treating depression. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by the Clean Bedroom Organic Bedding Showroom in Kittery, helping Mainers sleep healthy since 2004, also in Portland at Furnitura and online at thecleanbedroom.com, by the Maine Community Foundation, working with donors and other partners to strengthen Maine's economy and communities, on the web at mainecf.org, and by Maine Community Health Options, Maine's new nonprofit and member-led health insurance option. Learn more at maineoptions.org.
Well, Rob McCarley and Alan Bean Burpee, thank you so much for being here for what is, I'm sure, going to be a very interesting topic for our listeners. I wanted to start with sort of the big picture question. How do you define depression?
What a great question. So depression really, if we were to look at it the way that the DSM defines it, it is feeling sad or empty most of the day, nearly every day. Diminished interest in or pleasure from almost all activities. Folks who are depressed typically could sleep too much, sleep too little. They might be restless. They could be lethargic, might have difficulty concentrating, feel worthless, guilt, recurrent thoughts of death sometimes.
Are they? Are there levels of depression? Some of the things you mentioned, maybe somebody will have one or two, but not all of those?
For sure. And we rate them sort of mild, moderate to severe, and also everybody sort of has a day maybe that isn't their best. So when we are diagnosing depression, we're looking at, is that a pattern over the course of time, at least 2 weeks of nearly every day being very, very difficult?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rob.
And that pretty much classifies what we call major depressive disorder. There are other modes of depression which sometimes people piece out. We talk about things we used to call something called dysthymia. They've kind of parsed it up slightly differently in the newest DSM-5, but it's essentially, it's a lesser version, depression light. It's people who felt worse more days than they have good over the past 2 years. And we sometimes say things like not otherwise specified for things which don't meet quite criteria for both of those. But those are really kind of definitions. I think what Alan described is probably the best way to think about it.
Are there estimates of what percentage of us, how many people suffer from depression?
They really vary. It's about, I've seen a lot of different numbers, but I think it also varies depending on where you live. Maine has a relatively low rate compared to some states in the South, for example, of depression. Some numbers I've seen place our rate here in Maine between 7.1 and about 8.3% of the population.
And then it varies between whether we're talking about it at any point in time or a lifetime prevalence, and that number can go up, I think, as high as 15%, I think.
Well, that's interesting because that was one of my questions. We talk about it being a chronic disease. So for some people, it can be lifelong, but for others, it's not, it sounds like.
Yeah. So we're great with stats with depression. And I think Alan may have his down very well today. But I was looking through it, and they talked about the number. They talked about the rule of thirds for depression. You know, when someone is diagnosed with depression and we treat it, and I'm a psychiatrist at Maine Med, so we use a lot of kind of the medications everyone thinks about. You know, about a third of people respond very well to that, and they have a complete remission and do very well. And then there's another third of that group that have what we call a partial remission, and they still have some symptoms that remain, but they feel better, and they're able to get back in function. And then there's a group that really don't seem to get a lot better, and that can last for as long as 2 years or almost indefinitely. And it's a kind of a tricky process, and what we never know is who's going to respond before we try them. And so that's where all the trial and error, at least for medications, comes in place. Certainly treatments for depression absolutely involve individual therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy, which I'm sure in a variety of mediums. Those are kind of the basic rules that I think about. We sometimes talk about something called treatment-resistant depression, which is after you've tried a number of medications and trials, people who still struggle. And those are the folks that really have a tough time and often end up coming to an outpatient clinic like the one I work at in psychiatry, because so much these days is treated by primary care. The majority of depression, at least medication-wise, the first-line treatment are picked up and done very successfully by a lot of primary care docs, which is wonderful, although sometimes I miss seeing that wonderful first response of somebody who gets well really quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I think you touched on something that all you have to do is read newspapers and magazines to know that there's sort of an ongoing debate about medication for depression and other psychiatric disorders versus therapy. It sounds to me like you advocate a combination. Alan, do you feel the same way?
Absolutely. The people who recover the quickest are folks who have a combination of psychopharmacology and Dr. McCarley referred to CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy as sort of the one of the most effective treatments that we use for adults and for children.
What is that? Can you I've read that over and over, cognitive behavioral therapy. What does that entail?
Well, it really operates under the assumption that we get really hung up on our thinking. So there are sort of three parts. There's how we think, which then influences how we feel, which in turn can influence how we behave. So we know that if we can really work hard on shifting the thinking that people have, that they can begin to feel a little bit better and then begin to be more active and their functioning can improve. As well, the other way out is for some folks really find that activity is their way out. That's people who use exercise or spend a lot of time with friends or just very connected.
Mm-hmm. Let me put out the phone number for people who might like to join the conversation. 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at MaineCalling. Or post to our Facebook page. Alan, you mentioned exercise. I know that people who exercise often sleep better, and people who sleep better have an easier time dealing with many things in life. What are we learning about the interconnectedness of just all aspects of the way we go through our day?
Well, so I couldn't agree with you more. So sleep, as I always say, is a wonderful window into mood disorders and depression in particular. It's both a reflection of how someone's feeling and a contributor also. There are mood disorders you can actually cause as a result of if you make someone sleepless on purpose. But people with depression, as Alan said earlier, frequently struggle with sleeping problems, either sleeping too little. Usually it's falling asleep, ruminative thoughts at night, worrying about the days, shoulda, woulda, couldas type of things. But a lot of times it's sleep maintenance or staying asleep or waking up too early. And then people are tired and irritable, and that makes life more difficult in the daytime. Oftentimes, they get into a habit of poor sleep hygiene and napping sometimes in the day and withdrawing a little bit. Occasionally, you have the opposite, where people sleep too much and what we call kind of an atypical depression, where people have an excess amount of sleep. And so really, part of the treatment of depression is, it's exercise, it's structure to your day, it's going to bed at the same time, getting up at the same time, good sleep practices. We call it sleep hygiene, but it's really essentially making sure you're in bed with the TV off and not doing other things to divert you from sleeping. And we use sleeping medications. Often you'll hear when we talk about medicines, people come in for the treatment of depression, and sometimes the sleep medicine is talked about in the short term. And there's a variety of them. We try to stay away from habit-forming types of things, but that's why that's sometimes talked about. Melatonin is frequently used. So good practices, good daytime structure, and really working on good sleep.
Mm-hmm. Alan, how many are there enough people like the two of you in Maine? I know that in many pockets of the medical profession, dentistry as well, that there are not enough providers. If you are in rural Maine, are there enough providers for people who suffer from depression?
That's a really great question. I know that there are lots of mental health centers across the state. Some of the more populated areas are covered really well, in fact, by mental health centers. In terms of the more rural population, there certainly are, you know, more independent providers, but I've actually never practiced out there, so I'm not exactly sure what the stats look like.
Okay, Rob, do you have a sense of that?
I'll make a bolder statement and just say I don't think there are enough of us. I think the reason is complicated. I think that we have a Maine Medical Center. We have a lot of people who end up commuting quite far to come see us for a variety of reasons. I think a lot of it's reimbursement funding. A lot of people who don't have insurance. We have a large uncompensated care program at Maine Medical Center, which is wonderful if you're able to drive to this hospital or to a different medical center, which may have that program. But the availability for most people isn't always there. And even if you have a full range of insurance, sometimes the availability, it's tough to find a provider. It's tough to find someone who takes your insurance. It's tough to find someone who's still taking new patients with accurate information. Oftentimes you'll get a list of providers from your insurance company and you'll call them and they haven't been there for a while just because it's not always updated. I don't think there's any conscious effort about that. And there are sometimes it's difficult to get in too, even if you find a clinic. So I think that the turnover time's much better in Southern Maine. I think there's a large group, Maine Mental Health Partners, in Southern Maine that kind of is working on access and getting people in and having a good turnover. But we have a large mass here. As you get further north and west and more rural, it's tougher and tougher.
You mentioned insurance. I know it used to be a big issue that a lot of mental health treatment was not covered by major insurance carriers. Has that changed?
It's still – so I have the luxury at my current job of I don't have to deal with the insurance myself. We have an institution that does it. And so, Alan, you may have a different take or better knowledge about this. But certainly the mental health benefits are still carved out separately. So whereas you may have a plan for X, Y, and Z, your mental health benefits are different. And sometimes even your pharmacy benefits are then carved out by a separate person. So it's complicated, if nothing else. Sometimes there are large copays, and sometimes there are restricted amounts of providers who you're allowed to see, which make it more difficult if there's a limited amount of people around.
Alan?
Yeah, I will say that with insurance companies, we're finding more and more they want to be more and more involved in treatment, and they want people to come for shorter and shorter periods of time, which I would agree that we want people in treatment for the shortest period of time possible for them to get symptom relief. There isn't always an agreement between us, I think, and the insurance folks about that. But and going back to the other point about the number of providers, I think there's a distinction, too. There certainly is not enough child and family and adult psychiatrists here in Maine. I think there are far more of us, the clinicians, than there are of them.
Mm. You mentioned child and family. How common is depression among children, and is it treated differently than in the adult population?
Well, I think it's about 5% is the number that I found. And if we were to look at the population of Maine, I get a rough estimate of about 5,000 children who would be suffering from depression. And we here at CSI, we've been working very closely with the folks at Harvard and the Judge Baker Center to implement a treatment called MATCH, which stands for the Modular Approach to Treatment of Children. And that has a very specific and targeted treatment based in cognitive behavioral therapy that works with the child directly on the skills they would need, as well as working with their support system, whether that's their parents or their caregivers. And that's we've found that to be very, very effective.
Mm. And how long has this been in place?
I think that we've been involved with MATCH. It predates me, but I think it's been about 5 years.
Okay. Do you have anything to add about the treatment of children versus adults and even the diagnosing of children with depression?
Sure. So I'm an adult psychiatrist, I'll put out there. So that working with children isn't my specialty. We have a large child department at Maine Med. Sandy Fritch is a big person in that who's actually, I think, been here before. Diagnosis in children is always a complicated, somewhat controversial piece. It's gone through the years, certainly, with the idea of diagnosing of ADHD, and then bipolar illness has been something that's been diagnosed and has gone back and forth in terms of prevalence. I think anytime you use medications in children, people are very careful. And certainly access for child psychiatrists is much less than for adults. And there's a great need for both. So I guess that's as specific as I can get.
In terms of the diagnosis in children, you know, we see that kids who are depressed, you know, with younger children, they might avoid school, they might be more clingy to their parents, they might claim to be sick a lot, have some of those psychosomatic stuff. With teens, it can be particularly difficult because some of the symptoms such as irritability, a negative attitude, and sullen, people might sort of think that's what puberty is.
But. Right, right. I can imagine. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get to your comments and questions. So please stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
A new biography of Charles Manson shows how this cult leader and killer borrowed from the teachings of pimps, Dale Carnegie, Jesus, Scientology, and the 60s counterculture to make young women follow him and fear him. We'll talk with Jeff Gwynn, author of Manson. We'll also hear Manson sing an original song and hear the Beach Boys version. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. The March of Dimes is celebrating its 75th anniversary in Southern Maine with a signature chef's auction on Thursday, October 3rd. The event is a fundraiser for the March of Dimes, and guests will have the unique opportunity to sample great food and wine from a wide variety of Southern Maine chefs, bid on live and silent auction items, and learn more about the organization's mission to improve the health of babies. MPBN is pleased to be a media partner for the signature chef's auction, and MPBN members are entitled to a 15% discount on tickets. To learn about the event and how to take advantage of the MPBN member discount, visit mpbn.net and click on Events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Understanding, Recognizing, and Treating Depression. With me in the studio, Dr. Robert McCarley, who is Outpatient Attending and Outpatient Psychiatry Rotation Director. I was going to try to do that without stumbling. For the Department of Psychiatry at Maine Medical Center. Also with me today, Alan Bean Burpee, a therapist with Counseling Services Incorporated. We would like you to join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Going to start with an email from Peg. She writes, antidepressants and psychoactive drugs have been implicated in almost 100% of every mass shooting. I dare say Aaron Alexis will be found to have been on an SSRI or similar drug at the time of Monday's shooting. Diane Rehm's show yesterday dealt with the shooting topic, but not one guest made this connection, yet it's well known. Someone at WA asked why the U.S. led the world in mass shootings. Obvious. The U.S. leads the world in prescription drug use. Medical schools today are de-emphasizing talk therapy and pushing medication. I've worked in the mental health field and can assure you that drugs are not the answer. Dr. McCarley?
Yeah, I guess that would be maybe to me first. so I've been to medical school, and I would say, as I said earlier in the program, I guess to start, I certainly emphasize therapy in general, not just cognitive behavioral therapy. We talk about that a lot is because that's the really evidence-based form that's been shown to be very helpful, and a lot of studies as helpful as medications. And I always tell my patients this, and it has no side effects guaranteed and won't cost you anything. You'll be able to take it with you and not have a provider eventually. But I'm going to say for the vast majority of people that we work with, they often need something in addition. And it's very difficult. It's time-consuming initially, and sometimes the motivation isn't always there. So we emphasize both almost universally. If someone's not interested in medication, more than happy to have someone start with therapy first. And in terms of mass shootings, you know, that's a tough one for me to comment on. But I will comment on that, you know, I knew for many years that I will simply say that SSRIs, medicines like Prozac, et cetera, boy, they are incredibly commonly prescribed. So that means lots of things. But one of the things it certainly means is that there are lots of people on them anyhow, and I think their safety is pretty well identified because of that. I think folks who struggle with any type of depression or anxiety at some point in their life, and if you're having trouble, I think should look for help. And it's not surprising to me that folks who are struggling with some type of psychiatric illness might be on a psychiatric medication, just like someone struggling with diabetes might be on a diabetic medication. In terms of causal links, boy, I'd be pretty careful not to make that connection. With the only piece that I would say some folks with something like a bipolar illness, certainly if you're on just an antidepressant, it can make something like a mania episode worse. But I would not want to lay at the feet of all these awful things that have happened in our country, psychotropic medications or antidepressants.
Okay, Alan?
And we don't know even if he was on medication. Right. Was right. he taking it correctly? Was right. he being monitored well? And frankly, people who respond well to medications don't end up on the front page.
And if I could add also, without going off topic too much, even folks who struggle with illnesses like psychosis, like schizophrenia, who hear voices, the vast majority are not a danger to other people. They're not folks who are at risk for going out and having a mass killing or something like that. And so often I think I worry that that's the takeaway message that people end up having.
All right. Well, thank you. We're going to go now to the phones. Roz in Damariscotta. Roz, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Oh, yes. Hello. I have an adult son. He's 27. He's living with me and my mom, and he is depressed. Mm. It's going on years now. Probably suffered from it when he was a child, but unfortunately, he's too old to have taken advantage of that program you were talking about you started 5 years ago. I am pretty powerless of forcing him to get any help. Financially, no one in the family can pay for it. We have no medical coverage except for his grandmother, who's on main coverage. So, yes. What advice do you have? What help is there? What avenue can I take?
So maybe I'll take a first stab, and then Alan, you can dive in. Is that okay?
Yes.
So, first of all, Rosa, sorry to hear that. That's not an uncommon thing. Sometimes we hear from parents or loved ones of others who are struggling with depression, and maybe their motivation isn't so strong, or their ability to get help or interest in getting help. So the toughest thing in the world is to try to get someone to get help who isn't sure that they want it. But I would certainly encourage them. I work with a lot of folks who struggle in a similar situation that you do without insurance. And the thing I would encourage you to do is to call around at the variety of medical centers to see if you're qualifying for any uncompensated care, to make sure that you don't qualify. Maybe apply, check in with the local DSS or Department of Health and Human Services to see if you do qualify for Maine care. And that would be to cover just for visits. Once you are seen somewhere there, or even by a primary care doctor, you can talk about it. There's a variety. So I'll speak to medications first. I think therapy is trickier because you have to continue to see someone, and those are all visits. If you can get covered, I would encourage someone to do that if they're able to. There's a variety of very low-cost treatments these days. When these medicines first came out, they were incredibly expensive and heartbreakingly so sometimes for people who would lose insurance. And then as they have gone generic, I think people aren't aware of how affordable they really are, $4 or $5 a month type of thing for the majority of antidepressants. You have to see someone and you have to be treated. And that's really the first step. Services you can call to get more information. You can always call 211, which is a wonderful number for general resources. And they can always direct you in a general area. I think you're near Miles Memorial up in Damariscotta. They're a medical institution, part of Maine Health. And just to call around to see what services you might have access to and what information. And then there's a variety of treatments. Once you get that connection to a physician and maybe to a therapist too, which sounds like might be something that would be really useful. And I'll let Alan take it from there.
Yeah, the most important thing here, Roz, is that this is a highly treatable condition. And I would encourage you to do all the things that Dr. McCauley suggested. Mid-Coast Mental Health Center is up that way as well, which is also part of Maine Mental Health Partners. They do fantastic work. Perhaps if you were eligible to get a case manager, that could be super helpful. It might be a good entree into some treatment. But good for you for calling and asking that question.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your call, Roz, and good luck to you. Going now to Lorraine in Portland. Lorraine, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I would just like to find out your everyone's kind of opinions and ideas about the use of ECT for treatment of depression.
Okay, and ECT being?
Electroconvulsive therapy.
Thank you, yeah.
I knew somebody was going to call and ask that question.
Thanks.
Well, this is back in the news, isn't it?
I guess so. So I will talk a little bit about ECT. It's been used longstanding. We do it. We have it available at Maine Medical Center, and it's available throughout the state. It is a remarkably effective treatment, which has been shown to be life-saving for many, many folks. It's very safe. And, you know, everyone thinks of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or something like that, and this horrible episode. But it's really very safe, very simple. It's done with anesthesia, so people don't experience a lot of discomfort. There are some side effects, memory being one that sometimes comes up, and the more memory problems you have going into it, the more likely you are to have that. It's certainly not for everybody. We typically use it for folks who've struggled more and are kind of in that treatment-resistant phase. But if you're struggling with terrible depression or certainly suicidality, it's a really worthwhile thing to take a look at. I know the docs who perform it at Maine Med are wonderful. They're caring. They're real careful about evaluations and doing it. And for the most part, people are wonderfully thankful for the ability to get the treatment. So it's not always what you might expect.
Alan, do you have anything to add to that? No, not really.
Not really.
Okay, thanks, Lorraine, for your call. Going now to Faye in Kittery. Faye, go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Jennifer. One of the things that has recently been discussed, and really in the domain of primary physicians, is testing for vitamin D levels. And I've seen it happen over and over again. When people get their vitamin D levels tested, it's found that they're very low, but once they begin taking the vitamin D, it's an incredibly cost-effective treatment and can be incredibly beneficial. It appears that young people may start getting depressed because of the lack of exposure to sunshine due to increased screen time, I think, and also the decrease of their food. So for someone who has depression, and even for someone who thinks they might have depression and go to their
Faye, you're starting to break up. I think you must be on a cell phone, but I think we've got the gist of your comment and question. Are you seeing this? Are you seeing that vitamin D, Dr. McCarley, is often maybe a first line of defense?
So we screen for vitamin D often as part of a depression kind of workup and screening. And in the state of Maine, not surprising to anyone who lives here, should be most of the listeners, we don't get a lot of sunlight, especially in the winter months. People don't often get out as much and have as much sun exposure for a variety of reasons. So, yeah, vitamin D levels are often low. There have been, I think, a mixture of studies, but I would say the majority of early studies were that it is associated with depression and mood problems. It's a relatively simple fix. So I think it's a great idea. So a lot of primary care doctors usually are the ones who screen, test, and, you know, recommend. And it's actually an over-the-counter vitamin D that you buy at the pharmacy. So it's great. Terrific. I'm all for it.
Yeah, not very expensive. And, yeah. You know, good mental health treatment is a team approach. And so, you know, at our clinic in Biddeford, as well as in Springville, Kittery, and Westbrook, we work very closely with primary care doctors and really encourage people, if they haven't had a physical in the last year, to get out there and get those things done.
And is vitamin D, is it something that's easy to test for, whether you have a deficiency?
There's a vitamin D level, so it's simple. Yeah,
simple.
It's a simple blood test.
Okay, great. Thank you for your call, Faye. And going to Jeff in Elliott. Jeff, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I basically wanted to refer another reference. It's a book called The Chemistry of Joy. It was published in 06 by a psychiatrist, an MD, called Henry Emmons, E-M-M-O-N-S. And what he did was he was able to correlate the three types of depression. There's anxious depression, agitated depression, and the more familiar lethargic type of depression. He correlated them with the three doshas of Ayurveda, which is a 4,000 or more year old science through the Vedas in India, and with more of the mindfulness meditation, insight meditation, or Buddhist philosophy. So they're three very different approaches, but they all correlated tremendously well. He found that anxious depression was a result primarily of low serotonin correlated with a particular dosha in Ayurveda. And with knowing this in Ayurveda, it is not a medicinally or even herbally based treatment. It's a lifestyle-based treatment. So you recognize the stressors in your life, some of which were mentioned, lack of sunlight, lack of exercise, those things that weren't mentioned are lack of meaning in life, lack of purpose for or fulfillment in your job or family life. You know, all these things affect if someone becomes depressed or not.
All right. Well, Jeff, thank you for your comments. And I'll ask our guests about, you know, just different ways of thinking about depression in so many parts of medicine and so many sectors of medicine. There's a big discussion going on between traditional and holistic types of treatments. Do you, either of you, incorporate sort of what might have used to have been alternative treatments into your practice?
Where I trained in Boston, in the Harvard system, and some of the people I worked with actively did acupuncture, and we talked a lot about that, even in the hospital. And I've referred people outpatient for a variety of acupuncture treatments for anxiety and depression. Certainly mindfulness-based approaches. I mean, I've gone to conferences on it, and I've worked with a whole bunch of people. We have mindfulness-based CBT groups, which is cognitive behavioral therapy again. And the whole practice of a variety of things, DBT, being in the moment, it's a critical part of what we do. So I would incorporate that. I think all of these actions that we talked about can contribute to depression and can help us get out of it. The one thing I would also want to caution people is people who start struggling with depression very easily are blame themselves for a variety of things. And sometimes depression, there's nothing that we do that brings it on. It's not that we didn't do X, Y, or Z enough, or if we had just done something else. Sometimes it just happens. And sometimes to let yourself off the hook a little bit and allow yourself to go in and get some treatment. And that's where we say it's just like any other medical illness. You know, if you got sick from some serious illness, you would go to the doctor and not stay at home blaming yourself for somehow causing it, hopefully. And that would be the piece I just encourage people to do, but at the same time say, yeah, there are some other things that we can do that can help you feel better.
And Alan, you were nodding a bit.
Yeah, I know that at our clinic in Biddeford, we have a fantastic clinician, Monica Fischbach, who incorporates dance and movement into her work, especially with children, and has gotten some fantastic results with that.
Okay, well, we're going to go to another short break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions.
Designer babies, driverless cars, tracking devices on everything and everyone. This is the future, and it's coming fast. So you think that within 5 years, people will be sitting in the passenger seat while their car drives them to work?
And Beck.
I'm Guy Raz, predicting the future on the next TED Radio Hour from NPR.
And you can tune in for that TED Radio Hour following Main Calling at 1 o'clock here on MPBN Radio. For all you Vinyl Cafe fans, good news. Stewart and the crew are coming to Maine next month, and live performances are scheduled in two locations, Portland and Orono. The Vinyl Cafe will be in Orono at the Collins Center on Sunday, October 13th, and Portland at Merrill Hall on Monday, October 14th. Tickets are now on sale. For more information, visit mpbn.net and click on events. We hope to see you at one of those locations.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we're talking about depression. With me in the studio, Dr. Robert McCarley, a psychiatrist, and I'm really having trouble with that word. I apologize. Dr. McCarley and Alan Bean Burpee, a therapist. Thank you so much. We would like you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Going to Nancy in Jonesboro. Nancy, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes. Hi. I had a rather severe depression about 38 years ago, and I went to a clinic. This was outside of Maine, a famous clinic. And they wanted to give me psychoactive drugs, and I said no, didn't want it. So they did have an experimental thing called biofeedback, and while I was still depressed, I followed the biofeedback routine, which is basically they wire you up and you're supposed to will the blood out of your brain into your hands and so on. Well, I was actually able to do it, which made me able to mostly function, but it did not get rid of the depression. I was in a highly stressful job at the time. what actually it turned out to be. I read a lot, so I read and I thought, oh, maybe I have low thyroid. I went to the primary physician. He said, oh, no, you don't have that, and he didn't even test for it. 15 years I tried various doctors to test. Oh, you don't have that. No, no. And finally, I got one to actually do the simple, cheap blood test, and, of course, I had low thyroid, which you haven't mentioned yet, but was it's an important cause of depression, as are pesticides. It says right on the EPA labels, depression, if you get exposed to pesticides and industrial chemicals. I mean, these are critical. It's not just that people are mentally unbalanced because they're mentally unbalanced. There are logical and, I believe, usually physical reasons for it.
I'm going to let our guests respond to you've brought up a couple thoughts now. I'm going to let them have a chance to respond. Go ahead, Dr. McCarley.
Well, I'm glad, Nancy, that you were able to get treatment and get better. And it sounds like you were able to persevere and get your thyroid tested. So you're absolutely right about thyroid. There's a number of medical conditions clearly associated with major depression, which is why it's so important to follow up with a primary care doctor or psychiatrist as well. You should absolutely get your thyroid checked. It's the first thing we usually do because it's a simple thing. We always hope that's the answer because it's a simple thing to treat. And symptoms of hypothyroid or low thyroid are depression, lethargy, weight gain. Sometimes people have a little bit of hair loss associated with that too. And these are, and it's really amenable to treatment and very quickly and very simply done. So you're right there. There are other conditions. Sometimes anemia can cause fatigue, and other medical problems can be associated. Diabetes and heart disease sometimes in certain ways can be associated also. So it's important to go to the primary care doctor. Sometimes B12 folate we look at as well.
Do you have any thoughts about pesticides?
So I don't. I have a family myself, and we have a lot of conversations about the concerns potentially about pesticides, whether it's just lawn or from farms and in general. I think that everyone is careful about lots of things involving pesticides. I'm not aware of the direct association with depression. I just haven't seen that.
All right, Alan.
So I just wanted to say that a clinical social worker in me is responding to the advocacy piece of what Nancy was saying. I think that's a really important point to highlight. It may be folks who are feeling depressed have gone and sought treatment and maybe didn't get that great match right away. And I just want to really encourage people, if you feel like you're not getting the treatment that you want or it's not working, please speak up because it is a very treatable condition.
All right. Well, Nancy, thank you for your call. Going now to Laurel in Brunswick. Laurel, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much for talking about this. I'm wondering if you could talk about the differences between inpatient and outpatient programs and also partial hospitalization. And how clients can tell if they need these services? Thank you.
So I'll take that. I'm actually an outpatient doc. I ran the partial hospital program at Maine Medical Center for 3 or 4 years. I was the medical director there, and I'm actually transitioning to working at the inpatient hospital at Spring Harbor Hospital as the medical director come October 1st. So I have a little piece of each of them. So outpatient treatment is just what it sounds like. You see a doctor just like you do in an office after you make an appointment. You have a therapist and you go home. What a partial hospital is, it's an in-between step where it's usually a program that's Monday through Friday, 9 to 3, typically group-based. Usually behavioral therapy is the modality. They usually have a nurse practitioner or a psychiatrist or both. And it's an intensive program to avoid a higher level of care or going into the hospital, like an inpatient hospitalization. Certainly, if you're struggling with thoughts of suicide ever, you want to follow up for treatment. But usually when you're struggling with things like thoughts of suicide or you just can't function independently, you can't get up, take care of yourself, go to work, feed yourself, and just aren't making it, that's when we start talking about a level of care such as a partial hospital or inpatient. Inpatient is the highest level of care. Usually people go to the emergency department to get admitted to an inpatient hospital, but you can do it through your outpatient doctor, sometimes what's called directly. Spring Harbor, sometimes you can call and book an appointment for an evaluation to go there also. It is a locked inpatient is by definition locked, an inpatient unit, and usually that's for an individual's safety when they're really struggling with ending their life. There's another level of care not talked about that called a crisis stabilization unit or a CSU. We work a lot with the local CSU here in Portland, but they exist throughout the system also. And those are for individuals who need to go somewhere but aren't at a level of care where they're thinking of taking their life. So it's not a locked unit, and it's usually a temporary kind of break, and it's in between level of care of between partial and outpatient.
Okay. Well, Laurel, thank you for your call. Alan, did you have something you wanted to join to add?
Simply to say, don't wait one more minute to get help if you haven't done so already. And you can always sort out level of care after.
Okay, great. Going now to Lucy in Aroostook County. Lucy, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, yes. I have a comment, maybe followed by a question. The difference between psychiatry and the medical and the medical profession is that most likely if I go into a doctor's office and they're going to take a picture, x-ray, ultrasound, whatever, to figure out what's wrong. Are there any practices at this point that actually map the brain, look at the hormone levels, and prescribe based on that information?
Dr. McCarley.
So it's a good question. For the record, so for psychiatry, psychiatrists go to medical school and they do a residency just like other medicine specialties. Like other certain specialties, however, you're right. We don't have a lot of imaging testing, which we get. Sometimes we do some paper and pencil testing, neuropsych testing. We do some blood work testing like we've just talked about, but that doesn't guide treatment as much as with other fields. So it has a way of feeling less validating. Boy, it would be nice to have a picture and have me decide that we're going to do this based on an x-ray, CT, MRI, or PET scan. Those tests are done. They have things called functional MRIs. They have PET scans, MRIs. And all of this is done actively in research. It's just not advanced enough to the level that we can diagnose a depression based on that or direct a specific type of treatment. I think the greatest hope in the future is actually going to be a blood test. And through genetics, we're hoping that at some point you're going to be able to direct because of your this phenotype that you're more likely to respond to this type of medication or this type of treatment.
Mm. Well, thank you for your call, Lucy. And I want to end with this, Alan. You mentioned if you're in crisis to call, don't wait and don't try to figure out what kind of care. How do you know if you need to pick up the phone right now and call 211?
If you're having recurring thoughts of suicide, you got a plan and you pretty much think you're going to do it or you're at high risk of doing it, call. Even if you think you're maybe at mild or moderate risk of doing it, call. Can I give the number?
Yes.
It's 1-888-568-1112.
I will put that on our Facebook page, but also 211, if you can't remember that, right, is a good place to start.
True. And we sometimes use 774-HELP, which is also another way to get assistance. As well.
Okay. In greater Portland, for sure.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us today, Dr. Robert McCarley, Outpatient Attending and Outpatient Psychiatry Rotation Director for the Department of Psychiatry at Maine Medical Center. Alan Bean Burpee, a licensed clinical social worker with Counseling Services Incorporated. Today's program was produced by our volunteer Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. Cindy also answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our podcasts, by visiting mpbn.net/MaineCalling. Tomorrow on the program, exploring Maine's great outdoors for fun and physical fitness. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.